welcome to another episode of Ever Bristol City podcast. You may be watching live on YouTube or Twitter or listening later on one of the podcast platforms, but welcome. I'm delighted that I've got three regular guests to talk about yesterday's victory against Mark Robins Coventry City. But there's more to talk about than the victory, isn't there? And that is Neil, who's sitting with me here in our Clevedon, I'll call it studio, my back office basically, and then also regulars Ian and Mark. Morning chaps, how are we all feeling today?
Relieved at the result.
Yeah, no, that's true. Neil, what about you?
Result is everything, isn't it?
What we normally do is I get you to each of you to give me a quick resume of the game. But let's start you first, Ian. Not so much a resume of the game, but what did you think of the starting lineup? I mean, more blinking injuries, you know, and Joe Williams pulling out on the day. It picked itself, didn't it, Ian? Yeah.
The personnel wise, it might have picked itself, but formation wise, I don't know what he was playing at, because the last thing you need to do when you've got nine players out, the last thing you need to do is say, right, okay, I'm just going to completely change everything. So whilst I agree two up top against Coventry would have been handy, you need to be able to give them the ball. And our service to the forwards all season has been poor. And yesterday it was appalling. Having Tommy Conway in our side at the moment on occasions is like putting a Rolls Royce engine in a lawnmower. And if you're not, we just kept lashing the ball forward, people are not looking where they were kicking it. And the goalkeeper, well, his distribution first half yesterday, I thought he had his boots on the wrong feet. It was absolutely appalling. Now, we won the game, and I'm absolutely delighted we won the game, because if you'd have said to me after 25 minutes, I'll give you 100 to 1 if you bet me 50 quid that City will win 1-0, I'd have turned the bet down.
Yeah, okay.
Because we could have been, I'll say 2 or 3, could have been possibly more goals down by then.
We'll talk about some of those incidents. We'll talk about in terms of the
lineup, which is where your question started, we completely changed the lineup. We went with wing backs. That didn't work. Thank God he changed it after about half an hour, 32 minutes, whatever it was, when he hauled poor old Aidan Roberts off and brought Jason Knight on. And that was pivotal in us winning the game. Certainly, we'd have lost it had we persisted with that formation.
Yeah. Mark, Nigel named a nine-man bench. I mean, there was a few names like, Nelson's been on the bench a few times, with Joseph James and the forgotten man of the squad, Duncan Idahun. I mean, you know, at least he named a full match day 20, didn't he?
Yeah, of course, again, because we had nine players out, crammed full of academy players, and Joseph James, who I understand is a right-sided centre-back. I've never heard of the guy before, but that's the position that we're in. We're desperate because we've got so many injuries that we have to call on the academy. They're not first-team squad players. Nobody knows about them, but they'll be giving their all for Bristol City. But I'll agree with Ian. Yesterday wasn't the time to experiment. It looked like strangers most of the time. It was a complete and utter mess.
Yeah. Neil, this was the match billed as the encounter between the two longest-serving managers in the Championship. They came into this game only two defeats all season, the Sky Blues, and you know, some decent players. They splashed the cash a little bit in the summer. What did you think of the returning Jay De Silva?
Well, Jay De Silva for me was quintessential Jay De Silva yesterday, wasn't he? Technically very good, got the ball down, nice, you know, nice control, all the rest of it, but wholly ineffective. You know, the amount of space, the amount of time he had, particularly first half, his crossing was woeful again. And I just watched it and I thought, yeah, he hasn't changed a bit, really, in a lot of ways, actually. I can, can see how, you know, compared to the right back they had, he was bombing on forward and actually getting crosses in and actually being effective. You know, Jay didn't really get much beyond the halfway line, did he?
No, not at all. Ian, looking at them, we did a match preview this week and they'd splashed the cash. They had similar income as what we did, but splashed about three times as much, and that's being conservative. And they started with three players, Sakamoto, Sims and Gondon up front. I mean, that Sims is the sort of player that we've cried out for. He scored those two goals to Sunderland on the opening day of last season. But, you know, they should have been, as you said, they should have been out of sight after half an hour, shouldn't they?
Well, the difference was that, I mean, you couldn't really even call Rob Dickies a chance. I think we only had one other chance, and that was when Tommy hit that left foot shot and the keeper got down to his left to save it. And for all Coventry's problem was they didn't have a cutting edge, despite spending, I think the lad they brought on towards the end, and I think they brought him on too late, Hadji Wright. I thought, if you look at what they paid for him in Sims, about 15 million between the two of them. But they didn't have that cutting edge. It wasn't there. I mean, our defence played really well. But it was a case of having to be perfectly honest. I thought Andy King was outstanding. But the difference, if Coventry had had Tommy Conway up front yesterday, we'd have been two or three down in that period. So that just goes to show the value of that player. And it's just a damn shame we can't give him the service that he needs.
Yeah. Mark, they had 12 shots, one on target, 15 corners to our two. They should have been out of sight by half an hour. And, you know, those long-range efforts, if those two had gone in instead of hitting the bar, they would have been worldies, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and they don't even count as shots on target, do they? But they both, you know, one struck the top of the bar hard, one from Ben Sheaf was an absolute cracker, and I think there was another one from Godden, which was a lot nearer, and it just hit the top of the bar. But they were carving out the chances, it will, just breezing through our midfield, especially down the right flank where Roberts didn't give Pring any cover whatsoever. It was Sakamoto and Van Nieuwik, who was very effective in that game, probably their best player, just getting chance after chance, and it looked like just a matter of time until they scored.
Yeah. Neil, Mark just mentioned Roberts then. I mean, he's waited for his chance to come in. Okay, Nigel has taken off Alex Scott after 25 minutes. Alex making his at last debut for Bournemouth yesterday when they lost to Wolves. I bet Gary O'Neill was pleased about that. But Roberts, God, he looked as flat-footed and off the pace as what Kane Wilson did when he came on. It was a dreadful opening half hour from him, wasn't it?
It was a strange performance by Roberts yesterday. I saw him a number of times pre-season, technically very, very good. Mm. Obviously come through the Premiership academies, again, very good on that left flank. Oxford Cup game. Mm. Fantastic in that game, albeit it's against the League One side.
But is that it? Is that his level? Derby wanted to keep him, didn't they?
It's difficult because, you know, he's come on. He came on against Plymouth, and we've tried to fit him in and play him in the centre, and he was all over the place. He lost the ball a number of times against Plymouth, and they broke. And one of the times they hit the post, obviously, with one of the breaks. So he's not sort of fit enough. I thought it was an opportunity for him yesterday to actually make a statement, but it went in the reverse, didn't it?
Yeah,
really. I mean, getting hauled off after half an hour.
And I think said he didn't. He went
fully justified.
Yeah. Well. Oh fully god. Justified. But he didn't appear for the second half on the bench either, did he? Somebody said he didn't appear on the bench for the second.
I'm
half.
Over Dolman's side, so I can't.
You can't see that far with your X-ray. Your X-ray vision.
Yeah, with my X-ray.
Ian, you talked about Max's kicking. You know, he's got his critics. I thought kicking apart, I thought he did okay myself. What did you think? Would you agree with that?
His goalkeeping was absolutely fine. His distribution in the first half was dreadful. I mean, there was one where they do this thing where they kick it out to the flanks, which is I don't like it as a tactic. I understand why we do it rather than just ping it down the middle. But I don't understand why we play the ball forward in the air at all when you only have to look at us shaking hands every week and we look like we're putting the under-16s out. against the first team. It's less when you get to, all right, we've got some taller, bigger players out with the team, quite a few. You know, Atkinson, Naismith, Zach Viner. So playing it forward in the air, it's just not the, well, I'll say not the right thing to do. It's stupid. We just keep giving them the ball back. But that aside, and just going briefly back to Roberts, something that Nigel Pearson said that resonated with me is he said a while ago, you know, we're not just signing people for the sake of it. We're signing players that are better than what we've got. Okay, right, good idea. Yeah, that's the way you improve. So then explain Roberts, who looked completely out of his depth. Roberts, Mometi, who I don't know what's happened with him, and Harry Cornick.
I agree with you. I think Cornick's trying to prove a few critics wrong.
Well, hang on. Is he better than Naki Wells and Tommy Conway then?
Well, no, he's not. And I would sooner see.
What's the point?
Yeah, well, I agree. And, you know, it was interesting, Mark, to see Duncan Idahan come back in. You know, I mean, Duncan Idahan, we saw him, what, 18 months ago, made a couple of cameo appearances. Maybe there was some issues in the summer, preseason last summer. But a Duncan Idahan, he couldn't have been any worse than Hayden Roberts was yesterday, albeit he was playing in a different, Roberts was playing as a wing back, whereas you could have left Pring in his normal position and put Idahan back of a three, which is where he had two reasonably effective games for us, wasn't it?
He wouldn't have played. Exactly that. There was no way in God's earth that Idahan would have played unless we were absolutely desperate for players. I mean, I think it was on loan at Carlisle last year, didn't play particularly well. He was only on the bench, really. David is a filler, simple as that. And that's where we are at the moment, where we are desperate for players. 9 injured. This club's never going forward because of the number of injuries we got. It's absolutely desperate. What is going on? It's one of life's great mysteries. Just terrible injuries. Week after week, when a revolving door of injuries, when one decent player comes in, the other one goes out. We're promised players return after international duty in George Tanner. Never happens. Now, Cal Naismith's got his inevitable injury. The guy's injury prone. A very good player.
Joe Williams missed over
20 games. Yeah, Joe Williams, mystery injury. But just injury after injury after injury. This club is riven by injuries. Injuries are the biggest story about Bristol City. Not what the results on the pitch. Injuries are ruining this club. It's a complete and utter shambles.
I mean, that's a big statement to make, Mark. Neil, we thought that injury was due to Dr. Death and his cohorts up in the back room. I mean, as some gypsy put a curse on the HPC, because it does seem to be getting ridiculous again, doesn't it? Yeah.
I think we're talking about play. I think some of the players that we have, the press that we put on, the intensity in which we play at, we are prone to picking up a number of injuries. The Naismith thing, he's obviously got a chronic condition, hasn't he? Mm. It's obviously like one of those players that you read about that has a knee problem and it's never going to go away. Mm. He's had a couple of operations, et cetera, et cetera. And they alter their training regimes to incorporate that knee issue. Naismith has got a calf issue, and it's a calf issue that basically is going to flare up. And his availability is going to be 50, 60% of the season. But you take him out of the side and Viner out of the side, and you've pretty much got no passing in that side yesterday, have we?
Which is a poor indictment on the midfield, isn't it, really? Because Ian was saying we're doing just whooshing it forward and such.
Well, I know that we're going to go a bit more to the gate. So I don't want to race ahead, but yesterday it was like, obviously when I take the football and do the training, it was like, okay, this team defending, this team attacking.
Yeah.
And it was like a training drill. It was like, we get the ball, we defend what we have, and then we just kick it back to you. And then we defend, and then we just kick it back to you. And then we defend, and then we kick it back to you. I mean, as a game of football yesterday, I'd have to say there was only one team out there
playing football.
Playing football.
Yeah.
There was another team that was defending, and defending
very well.
And that was us. What we have.
Yeah.
But we had three shots. I think there was the Weimann shot in the first half that the keeper made quite a good save from, the goal, and then I think Jason Knight had a shot in the second half.
Yeah.
And other than that, I don't think we had any shots.
No, we didn't. No, there's nothing. There's nothing really to talk about. Neil's just said about, you know, the press, the way we press is going to put, you know, make us prone to injuries. But I thought Coventry, you know, they looked fit. They were pressing us a lot when we had the ball. I mean, we didn't get, I mean, when Naismith's in the back three and dinks it around, you get worried that he's going to do a rip because he's got history when it comes to that. But I don't buy this that we're, you know, we're pressing too hard. I thought they pressed a lot harder than we did yesterday. And, you know, they don't seem to have the injury record that we got, do they?
You bring in players to suit your style of play. And it doesn't matter whether you're Liverpool, Bristol City or Exeter United. You bring in players to suit your style of play. So if you want to play a pressing game, Nigel's signed 21 players now. If you want to play a pressing game, you bring in players or a lot of players who can play that press. Now, I don't think there's a problem in terms of fitness, in terms of running. Like, for example, Sam Bell, Mark Sykes, Tommy Conway, Naki, when they're fit, they can press, they can run. They're not the best tacklers in the world, any of them, but forwards normally aren't. But they can press, they can close down. Andy Weimann, nothing wrong with him running about. He can run about all day. Whether he achieves anything is a moot point sometimes. But because he went back to the old out-of-control speedboat yesterday. But, all right, our shape was wrong. And if you're going to play, you know, if you're going to play that three at the back, I think whoever said it's quite right. You could have played Pring in his proper position, left Roberts on the bench and started with Duncan Aydin or Rafa Roya or Campbell Slowey. We've got a rake of young 6 foot two, 6 foot three centre backs. A few of them are left sided. So give them a go. All right. Once again, if the lad's not having a great game after 20 minutes, you could come like he did with Roberts. But at least he's playing in his best position. And when I saw Aydin the season before last up at Derby, I thought he looked physically capable of playing at that level. And I mean physicality-wise, because there's one thing you'd look at our team and say we lack, with the exception of the injured players and Rob Dickey, is physicality.
Well, we're not a big team. And I agree with you there, Ian, about Pring could have stayed in his original position. And you could have had a youngster, maybe not Roberts, but Roberts was the obvious choice if you want a player that isn't a youngster, because you would have had King and Pring alongside the youngster to help him through the game. Mark, coming to you. Look, it was a win, and that win came on 45 minutes. I mean, take us through the goal, Mark. What were your thoughts? I mean, it was like, you know, a big cheer, but God, how have we gone in front in this game? But take us through the goal.
Well, Jason Knight won the free kick with a fantastic bursting run. And I thought the referee, funny enough, took the ball about 10 yards further back than where the incident took place. So it's about 30, 35 yards out to the left of the goal. Taylor Garner-Hickman curls it in. Lovely flighted ball. And Rob Dickey's there just on the six-yard line on the right-hand side and heads the ball down. That's an important thing. It's hard for the keeper. Heads the ball down towards the ground and then the keeper tries to get his hand to it as it's coming up and can only push it into the net. Yeah. Great contact and a great goal. You know, surprising. You know, everybody's looking with relief and absolute shock that we score.
Well, it makes a change though, Mark, doesn't it? Because we've often put teams under pressure. You know, and you know, even the Stoke game, I mean, it was just revenge for that because, you know, we should have won that one easily. But this was the reverse case scenario. So it does make a change for us to come out.
Well, if you look at that and the Leeds game, we couldn't lay a glove on Coventry. We couldn't lay a glove on Leeds. And our only weapon is set pieces. because we can't pass the ball. We've got nobody from midfield who can pass the ball to the forwards. That's why Conway and Bell didn't get the ball. Right. There was just no creativity. Right. So that's the only way. And well, no corners, but it was a lovely flight of ball. Garner hit and passed the ball well. But yeah, it was a great finish by Dickie. Head the ball down, you know, training manual stuff into the ground. Keeper couldn't save it. Yeah. Brilliant. Neil, great way to go in half time with a lift. Yeah. Can we blow the whistle now and just all go home? I would have preferred that and put my feet up.
I know, 6 minutes time added on for Matty James' head injury. Touch of the Terry Bushes with the blood seeping through the bandage by the look of it.
Yeah, anyway, I decided that if Rob Dickie's going to be our our gladiator, we should change his name to Biggest Dickus. I think that's going to be his best name, isn't it? Let's call him that.
Neil, that goal, it was timely, and it really and truthfully, Coventry had huffed and puffed and missed, and they must have gone in thinking, oh my God, all that, you know, we should be 3-0 up, but we're 1-0 down. And it was the one bright spot from City in the whole 90 minutes, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Pearson's obviously come out and he said, we tried to match them up. And I thought watching the first 20, 25 minutes yesterday, it was going back to the Lee Johnson era. Mm. Where we're just trying to change our formations to match up people. They're settled in that formation. That's what they play every week. There's always a danger when we use the word try to match them up because the players that we've got are different to the players they have in those positions. We play a certain way. Mm. Matty James gets that bad head injury. It gives us a chance for a reset. And it's not a reset where, you know, there's a little note coming across and everyone's running around trying to do it. We had about 3 or 4 minutes there where all the players go across to Curtis Fleming and he explains, right, this is the way we're going to do and we're going to fall back into that position. And that Matty James injury came at the absolute best time.
Because we could reset.
Complete reset in relation.
I think the other thing that typified Matty James' injury, Neil, and also a challenge, two challenges that he made on Eccles halfway inside our own half, where he made two strong challenges on the ground and won the ball and set up the chance, the breakaway, where Wyman just lost his impetus, didn't he, going to the left to try and find some room and the keeper made a save. But I think that was, you know, two great challenges there to set that up. That typified James's fighting spirit, and he's been very good this season.
Mm. When the guy that Marks has brought up there, Wyman, when we actually think about, he's lost that initial burst of pace, hasn't he? It's gone, hasn't it?
He's back in the room. Ian's back in the room. That, yeah, no, he has.
That 5-yard burst that he always had, that little, okay, he never had it over 10, 15 yards. But that little galloping,
it's gone. Ian, you're back in the room. I mean, we talked about the goal. Mark made the point that it was a good header because as he did head it down and the keeper flicks his arm up there. I mean, you must have thought, my God, you know, we're ahead in this game, yeah? As I did. Yeah, it was unbelievable.
It was a bit of a muted response to the goal, to be perfectly honest, because I think everybody was just shocked that we'd been that bad. But we'd gone ahead. And yeah, you're right. It's happened to us. We're you know, we were 2 goals ahead against Stoke. Should have killed the game off. Didn't. And then we all know what happened. But great delivery from TGH. And you can understand why Corbyn says, well, I don't really know which is best position because I don't know. I think I'd probably prefer him in midfield to right back. But it's not 100%.
I thought he did a tidy job yesterday, and to be honest, because
it was a lot better when Knight came on the field.
Well, and Knight, and considering, I think he must have had diarrhea or a stomach upset because it was a sudden illness, they said, and then maybe absolutely shat himself to death, and they thought he didn't have any body strength, but he came on and gave what I would say one of his best performances, didn't he? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I thought Knight was decent, and there was purpose to what he did because he can go down the Andy Wyman out of control speedboat route. And he was doing that just before. I mean, he didn't have a great game at Leeds.
A great game yesterday, I didn't think. Got a yellow card as well for impetuosity.
No, I'm talking about Jason Knight. Oh, and Jason. He didn't have a great game didn't have a great game at Leeds. A lot better yesterday. I'd say, well, he's benefited from a rest, but he didn't get any rest because he played for the Republic of Ireland, didn't he? So,
yeah.
That was pivotal. Changing the formation back to what most people would probably say we should have started with, and changing the getting Knight on in midfield made James and Gardner Hickman's contributions more meaningful. We still didn't create much, if anything, much in the final third. But, you know, we got the 3 points. We kept a clean sheet.
We're 4 points, eighth. 4 points off third. You know, I mean, there's two teams that are running away with it at the moment. Mark, we're talking there about good performances. I think Matty James had a good game. Taylor Gardner-Hickman, I thought, was effective. But we're also saying, in the same breath, that the problems are midfield and the lack of creativity. And if you take Cal Naismith out of that side, I think Ian's being a bit generous saying Viner's a passer. He can pick a pass for a defender.
No, that was Neil said that, Dave, not me.
Okay, Neil said that. Yeah. Never mind. No, that Viner can pick a pass, but he's good for a defender. For a defender, he's good for a...
Viner's passing the last 2 years has improved
dramatically.
Dramatically.
But we're talking, I'm saying to Mark, the midfield, we're talking about some good individual performances, yet we're saying there's no service to the front men. So, yeah, how do we correct that, Mark?
Well, I mean, you're left with Matty James can pass the ball, but he's primarily playing as a defensive pivot, normally with Joe Williams. I think the only player who can pass the ball, if you saw yesterday, but I don't know if he can do that regularly, would be Taylor Garner-Hickman. He's the only player we got left who can pass the ball. Mm. If you want to make Jason Knight effective, really, you want him playing behind the front man in the hole, somebody who can arrive late on the ball and make those runs in an offensive capability. Mm. Yesterday, he was used in a sort of, you know, a sort of press. He blunted Chief, didn't he, in the midfield. He gave their central midfield a lot to think about, because of his energy, you know, and his tackling. But that's not what he's there for. He's there to be an attacking midfielder. Yeah. So you need somebody who can pass the ball to him and the forwards. All I can think of is Taylor Garner-Hickman, because let's face it, if Cal Naismith's got a calf injury, he's going to be out for a few games.
You can't rely on him. You can't rely on him.
You can't. Well, you know, he missed 20, 24 games last season.
Yeah.
Which that's nearly half a season. Not he didn't play 60%
of the games. When he's fit, Joe Williams isn't.
Yeah, we got hardly any creative players. We sold Alex Scott.
We haven't got
a line breaker like Antoine Semenyo, somebody who can break lines, hold the ball with back to goal. You know, you couldn't knock him off. He could occupy three defenders and dribble his way out of a cul-de-sac. You've got nobody who can do that now. Right. So it's all about good service. We just haven't got the good service. So he's going to have to come up with a game plan for Wednesday's game, because Ipswich score from all over. But we got to be competitive.
Well,
we can't play like that or get hammered. Simple as that. But play the formation the players know. Play 4-2-3-1, which, funny enough, Ipswich play. They play a 4-2-3-1. So you can match them up by accident.
Yeah. Neil, what did you think of Mark Sykes yesterday? I mean, I thought he was crap against ineffective against Leeds and Rotherham. Didn't look on it. I think, yeah, we used to play Martin Scott then. We used to play Alex Scott in that right back role. And I think Sykes at right back, he's not as good a defender as George Tanner, but I think
we played Scott as right wing back. We never played him as right back.
Okay, fair enough. Right, but Sykes was started as a wing back, but effectively when we went back to the formation, he's a right back. Neil, I think Sykes is okay back there. At least he gets involved with the game and he gets forward a bit more than Tanner does. And in the absence of McCrory, who was a specialist signing for that position, I thought he did okay defensively yesterday, didn't you?
I thought Sykes yesterday, his reading of the game at right. Yeah, there were some times where he held onto the ball a bit too light. Every time he got the ball at right back, they pushed a silver on him on a very quick press to deny him any opportunity to come forward. So he was having to hit long balls, hitting hopes down the line and all the rest of it. So actually, distribution-wise from him at right back, not great. But what he was very effective on yesterday was the cutbacks. The goals we've conceded, if we go back to, say, the Stoke game, the second goal, down the right, cutback, Tanner's ball-watching, whether he had an injury at that time or whatever, he's ball-watching a guy that's in front. Yesterday, cutbacks-wise, we were really
on it.
Sharp to it.
Yeah,
both on both sides, both the left back and the right back, you know, were the reading of the game, their interceptions of those, we shut them down.
Yeah.
So Sykes, I thought, effective at right back. We miss him up top, obviously.
Yeah.
Because Feynman's out there, and Feynman is just
fine. Well, we have, because of that lack.
But
of...
we miss him up top, but...
But we had, you know, I mean, because of the lack of service, I mean, Conway, he had that long-distance shot that was fielded by the keeper. I thought Bell was like a little boy lost running around.
Out night, there. Night.
With was it night with the long-distance shot? Yeah. Bell was like a little boy lost running around out there. Weimann, I thought, was poor.
Well, in a three, the space is going to be behind the wing-backs, isn't it?
Mm.
And in the past, that's where we've hit them on the three.
Mm.
When we've played against the three and against the wing-backs, the space is behind the two wing-backs. Mm. That's where the space is. We were hitting balls just down the middle the whole time and expecting Tommy, who's got Carl McFazardine behind him.
Who's a donkey, isn't he? How he's still playing at this level.
How you play those guys is you get it down on the ground and you get them turned.
Mm.
And you're playing it into the space and you're getting the runners in behind. Bell behind, Conway behind on the run. We were just looping balls up in the air and expecting them to, you know, with their back to it. What are they, 5'9"?
Yeah.
5'9" or something like that. They played with three. Bobby Thomas yesterday, the ex-Gashead, who played for him.
Did he?
Yeah. Right. Thomas was, you know, we made them look good defensively yesterday. Yeah. We made them look solid. But if you're just going to loop a ball and hit and hope and hit and hope and expect Sam Bell and Conway, it was quite similar to the way we played against Birmingham. We tried the same sort of thing.
Well,
we didn't hit the areas.
Ian, Andy King, yeah, he had his critics last season when he did play at centre half, but I thought he was one of the better performers yesterday. And that tackle he did down at the end, down towards in front of the Coventry City fans. I'm glad it's Wednesday when our next game is rather than Tuesday. But you know, he's a good player to have around the squad, and that was vintage Andy King, wasn't it?
Andy King played very well, and when we switched to a back four that we've been playing for a long time. A lot of things clicked into place. The other thing we did is we stopped letting, for example, in the first half, I mean, I know Jada Silva's an ex-player, but did we need to give him the freedom of Ashton Gate when he came back in the first half? I mean, on some occasions, he was in 30 yards of space.
Yes, he was.
Out on that left flank. And it's a good job he's not a better crosser of the ball or a better player. And I don't think his crossing was too bad yesterday. But no, I thought Andy King, if you look at the experienced players we had, Rob Dickey, Andy King, Matty James.
Campering played good.
And I'm hoping that Matty James, we don't hear that, he's failed the second part of the concussion protocol with that head injury and he's unavailable against Ipswich because that wouldn't, it would upset me, but it wouldn't surprise me. These days, and I'm not saying I want people to play when they've got injuries. I certainly don't. But it's getting increasingly difficult, and Pearson and his coaches are going to have to sit down and come up with something cleverer that the players we've got are capable of playing. But during the in the pre-season, not just me, but loads of people on social media and loads of people I spoke to and on this podcast, we said, what players do we need? And the three players that kept coming up all the time was a centre-back, a creative midfielder and a centre-forward.
Yeah.
Those were the three players that kept coming up time and time. And not just me saying it, not just you or Mark. Loads of people on social media saying, why don't, you know, we haven't got a Brian Tinian, we haven't got a Paul Hartley.
Yeah.
Somebody that can
spend, if we're going to spend any money in January, that's it. Mark, I think we've done the game to death, but just to finish off, referee yesterday, David Webb, decent, didn't notice him too much.
Yeah, great. I thought it was a great performance. Didn't notice him, kept the game flowing. I think he thought he was very fair, and majority of the referees that we've had have been very good. I think you can get a lot away with more physicality in the Championship. You know, lots of things going on at corners that you wouldn't get away with in the Premier League, but it was a good physical performance. Yeah. And the referee managed, he was very even-handed. Yeah, good for him. So a referee that you don't see that keeps a game flowing is a great referee in my book.
No, I agree with that. Neil, just short of 23,000 in the stadium yesterday, 3,000 Coventry fans in the Atio. I mean, you know, it was like a home game for them almost, wasn't it? I mean,
I think Bristol City,
we've got to do something about this, yeah, because it creates...
They were shouting out, "Is this a library?" I felt inclined to shout, "Yes, do you want to borrow a book?" Because it is like that, isn't it, a lot of the time? We don't give them much to shout about, do we?
Sorry, Neil. There's got to be 10 games a season when it's got to be packed like that. And I think it gives them an advantage.
Well, for years in E32, the people around me know my views on this. I've always felt like it's given them a huge advantage. Going back to that horrible year where we conceded all those late goals and all the rest of it, the statistics were there that 85% of goals for opposition were scored at the Atio end. Mm. And that, you know, ultimately, second half, every team plays that way.
Yeah.
The away team always
plays. Yeah, but the counter to that is we like to play towards our end.
But
I think if you do it the other way, realistically, you're right. You look at Bristol City and it is normally voted one of the best away days.
Yeah.
And why is it voted one of the best away days? Where they come down, it's a nice place to go out and drink. It's a nice place to socialise, all the rest of it. And then you get there, and blimey, they give us the whole stand behind the goal.
Yeah.
And we can bring down in the numbers and we can do this. Ultimately, how much money does City make from the away end? This is the thing that they charge... £39 or whatever
Call it 35 quid times 3,000, about
sort of over £100,000 that we're making and from the things in there. So I think, and that they always make that thing, yeah, we could segregate in the Atio, but the cost of the security, the cost of the stewarding, the cost of mucking around with the turnstiles and all the rest of it. If there was an intent to do it,
it'd have been done by now. Fair enough.
We've kind of given up on this.
All right.
I know Lee Johnson back in the day made a huge point on it. About we're too nice, we give the entire away end to people.
Okay, look, we talked more about the game than I intended, and a few people said, don't focus too much on the game, talk about this. And I'm just going to play this out from here. This is Nigel's post-match interview.
I think you're going to have to turn the volume right up on it because it wasn't very
going to. Yeah, well, you, there you go, it's maximum volume on here. Here we go, this is part of it, and it will come out okay on the... Here we go.
In positions where perhaps they're not as comfortable as they might be.
Well, that's your... That's not for me to say. That's for you to say and other people to either agree with or disagree with. It doesn't matter. All I'm trying to do here, along with my staff and us as a whole football operation, is to make our football club more competitive. And whether that means we're a good football inside or it means that we can scrap against people or... when the chips are down, that as it has been for the last 2 weeks, that we can come out on top in a tight game. So as far as I'm concerned, it's just a good afternoon for us to come away with 3 points.
And it definitely shows that you are now a team that is hard to beat more often than not.
Well, I hope so. We'll find out on Wednesday, won't we? I mean, that's the big thing. You know, I can say what I want today and there might be one or two barbed comments on purpose from me. And they are. But I'm not bothered because... it becomes a situation in which I might be fighting for my job like anybody else's. Whether the players are fighting for a place, I might be fighting for my job. So I don't really care what other people think, to be fair. Look, all I'll say to you is, why don't you ask somebody above me for once? See if you can find somebody who's going to say anything. But the last 2 weeks have been very irritating for me. I'm not exactly in the best situation, but I'm fine. I'm fine and I'll get better. And I'll honour my contract, so we'll see where it goes then.
There we go. Ian, that's prompted a thread on OTIB that's last time I looked, I think it was 10 pages long already, first thing. Irritated. I mean, he talked about his situation. And just hearing that again, actually, he's still got that back problem. But what has irritated him, do you think, over the last couple of weeks? Is that he didn't get his back operation done, or he talks about the people upstairs, you asked them? What was your take when you heard that?
It's very interesting where he said, see if you can get an answer out of anybody. That was the telling phrase. It's not up to him whether he gets a new contract. An opinion split on whether he should. You know my opinion. I think we should leave it until Christmas. And if we are where we are now and we're prepared to give the man some money to strengthen the squad, then yes, he should get a new contract. I'm a big fan of the 1 year rolling contract because it gives him security, it gives the club security. So, but not now, because we're not playing well enough, we're not doing well enough.
Well, I said,
we haven't done we haven't done well enough in the last three seasons. Now, when the club put an accountant in charge, they didn't replace the CEO, probably because he's been made redundant and they had to compromise him out, is a guess. And you can't make a position redundant and then employ somebody in the same position, certainly not for a certain length of time. If you remember when Mark Ashton first came in, he was a chief operating officer. And then he became CEO because they previously made the previous CEO redundant, I believe, to get him out. Now, Alexander's gone. You have to say, if the CEO is an important and key position, as it was when we brought in Richard Gould, and it was when we replaced Richard Gould, why haven't we got one? And why have we got an accountant, Gavin Marshall, overseeing, I think, group-wise, and another guy who's also another accountant, whose name I forget, is Football in Operations CEO. COO, sorry, not CEO. So, it to me, it seems if you put guys that are financial people, and I hate this phrase football people because sometimes clubs have them and they're real bad news, but they're financial people, not football people, not commercial people. It strikes me that you're trying to control costs more than you're trying to control football.
I take issue on a point there, Ian, about because you're putting the accountants as in, you know, the bean counter types, yeah? And I speak as a qualified accountant myself, although left the profession over 30 years ago. You know, you can have commercially oriented people in those positions that people who know the numbers but are commercially okay as well. I think there's a lack of football people at Ashton Gate, and I think all of us here, we probably know as much, I dare I say it, more about football than the people at the very top of this club.
So shouldn't your to pick you up on that, so shouldn't your football operations officer, your chief operating officer for football, know about football?
Depends what you say know about football, because that's implying that he needs to be a football player.
For example, who does Brian Tinian now report to?
Well, he's probably reporting into that person with an accountancy background who's carrying the title of chief operating officer. Look, at the end of the day, what it boils down to...
Who does Nigel Pearson report to? The same bloke.
This is Steve Lansdowne's train set, and he can do... He really doesn't give a flying you-know-what about what we think. We're sat on here today chewing this over, but it's his club.
It's not us. That's irrelevant. It's the fan base.
All right, the fan base. But there's people...
So the fan base are saying,
that's not very generous giving him a rolling 12-month contract. Actually, you know, I think they could give him...
offered that at the club.
Yeah,
Dave. That's just what we've spoke about.
You decided
to put on OTIB.
Yeah,
you decided to put on there about a 1 year rolling contract. The club haven't mentioned it.
No, the club, and by the club, it's the Lansdowne's. That's what we're talking about. I don't think either.
What are these other characters doing then? If it's just the Lansdownes. If it's just the Lansdownes.
Operating staff. You said it yourself, Ian. Every decision involving money is taken by.
Yeah, big money.
But day-to-day stuff, these people on the sideline, they're not involved on the training ground with Nigel and Brian Tinian. Mark, let me bring...
Dave, I'm not suggesting they are, but if he's, you ask me why I felt he's irritated, it could be that since Richard Gould's gone, or since... what's that other guy's name?
Phil Alexander.
Since he's gone, Nigel Pearson doesn't know who he's reporting to.
No, I'd agree.
So somebody on here says Lansdowne makes all the decisions. Yeah, I know that. All the major financial decisions, yeah. If we're going to get a new franking machine, he doesn't decide about that, right? But all the major expenditure he deals with, and he signs off all the budgets. Totally understand that. But this isn't what we're talking about. We're talking about, does the club think Nigel Pearson is the man to take them forward? Now, I might think he isn't. You might think he is. He might be thinking, well, then if I'm going to take the club forward, I need a 3-year contract. All right? I don't mean to say the club got you.
I think I said this on Twitter the other night. I don't think Nigel is the sort of guy he's the sort of guy that he could walk even if he was given a 3-year contract tomorrow. If things weren't going great, I think he's at a stage of his life, and you just read some of the in-depth articles about him, where football isn't his be-all and end-all. Mark, you've got your hand up there. Ian and I have had a little bit of a rant between us. Was the irritation comment because there was a... Was he talking about his health with his back? You know, because he said, I'm not in a good place at the moment. Does he have that back? Or was he hoping that maybe somebody was going to say, oh, Nige, you know, maybe not now, but we're going to give you a new contract. It's only going to be a rolling 12-month one in the 1st of Jan. What do you think prompted that comment?
I'll put it in very simplistic terms from the human side. I think Nigel Pearson's in a lot of pain following his back operation. That's influenced his comments on Radio Bristol. He goes into work every day, in pain. He sat on the bench and Curtis Fleming's doing all the directing because he's not able to stand up. So at the moment, he's not in a good place mentally because of his back operation. I think that's the first thing. The second thing is the club possibly deliberately don't want to clarify his position. And because of his back problem, he is having problems reconciling those two things. Normally we think as Nigel Pearson is totally unflappable. Nothing gets past him. He can deal with anything. I think with his back problem and he is feeling the pressure, there's a mess in terms of communication. The club isn't doing great. You know, he can't do what he wants on the pitch because of constant injuries. That's affecting things. So I think he's trying to force the issue now because influenced by his back injury. He wants the club to make a decision. The fan base might want that. Let's look at the results and what he's done over the past 3 years. Nigel Pearson, based on that, doesn't deserve a 2-year contract, possibly a rolling contract, maybe. Yeah, but it looks like because of Nigel's health and where he is mentally at the moment, and it's just my opinion that he is trying to force the issue. Now, if he is trying to force the issue and he wants a decision now and he's putting the club in that position, they could agree to part company on amicable terms sooner rather than later. That is an option, but it would mean the club would have to have somebody lined up and they could make some sort of settlement. Obviously, if that's Nigel's decision and the club haven't forced it, they wouldn't have to pay. They wouldn't have to pay off the remainder of his contract. But if he wants a decision now, the club, I would say, don't want to award him a new deal because that's why they're letting it go on. So if that's the case, they believe that, and Nigel wants a decision, they could come to an amicable decision that he goes. He is independently wealthy, doesn't need another job. He's got interest at outside football. And with his health now, why would he want to put himself through that? there's a good book on football management called Living on the Volcano, which talks about the pressure that managers are under. You know, would you want to do that job? It must be an absolute nightmare. You're damned damned if you don't. Constantly being under pressure for results. I mean, I'd say it's worse than trying to be prime minister. The amount of decisions, having people on your back, fan base all the time. And I think with our fan base, because the way that the club haven't progressed, it's not necessarily they want to. I think in their heart of hearts, they don't want to necessarily want Nigel to stay because of his ability, what he's done. It's just for continuity purposes, because they want stability in the club, and that's it, because they're worried about what will come after. Nothing's guaranteed in life. We're worried about what came after, and you'll look at replacing Derek McGuinness with Sean O'Driscoll and what a disaster that was. There have been so many examples down the history of Bristol City where he replaced somebody with somebody very poor afterwards.
Well, you know, Bobby Houghton,
Benny Lennartson, and it's been an absolute, let's put it, a shit show. But if Nigel wants a decision now, and I think it's being influenced by his health, if he wants a club to make a decision, then they won't give him a new contract, I'd say, then part on amicable terms, but the club better have a succession plan in place or somebody lined up to ensure they stay in this division. They'll inherit exactly the same problems that Nigel does. But if Nigel wants that decision made soon, then, and I think it's been influenced by his health, just sort it out. It'll be much easier for him, his health, the club, and the fan base will get a clear answer.
Yeah.
How's that?
Neil, well said, Mark. That was very rational. Very rational points put forward there. What's your take on it, Neil? I mean,
there's two sides to it, and Mark and Ian have both made very good points in relation to it. But going back to the summer transfer window when Scott got sold and the rug got pulled underneath him, really, he was going on about there was the plan A and the plan B in the summer, and things have changed. And he kept being asked, didn't he? Well, what do you mean things have changed? And he's like, I'm not the right person to be asking those questions to. You need to be speaking to somebody else. And nobody from the club came out. And then we had the Phil Alexander thing. You were going, come on, Phil, where are you type thing.
Yeah.
And then I don't think he was made redundant. I think he left by mutual.
I think it was mutual consent. I would agree. Because the thing we talk about the train set owner, but who did the stuff with the press when it came to Alex Scott's transfer? Because it was Lansdowne that was speaking, and then Phil Alexander, when he did that interview on Radio Bristol, he was almost saying, oh, I felt privileged to be involved in the transfer of Alex Scott. It was almost as if he'd been told, you better say you're involved in this, or was his card already marked that he was going out the door then?
So there's stuff fundamentally going on at the football club at the moment. There's no... All the points that Mark's made, I won't go through it again because he made them very well. With regards to his health, we've all been in those situations whereby you've got a chronic condition or something like that. You're a very patient person. You watch what you say. You're not somebody to, you know, when he first came that first year, he was throwing everybody and anybody under the bus in a way. And he's rowed back from that position now, and he's very tactful normally. And he just says, well, I'm not going to answer that. I'm not going to answer. Yesterday, you could tell pain, whatever. He just had enough.
Yeah.
He'd had enough yesterday. And it did it. The issue I have is that type of approach just never works at Bristol City.
Yeah,
it just never works. There's if you front up the Lansdowne's,
there's only one winner.
Yeah. There's only one winner in that situation, and almost calling them out. But I think somebody does have to come out and explain what has changed, because we're talking about £35 million worth of players that we've sold in January, and spent
about seven.
I don't think we spent that, Dave.
Oh, no, I'm being generous.
I think we've committed to the TGH
scenario. All right. Well, let's call it seven. And you don't need to talk about wages. Coventry had £35 million. They spent 20. We had £35 million, and we've spent six.
From what I can see about it, it's probably the case that Lansdowne has said, you know what, every year I write a check for 20 million or whatever like that. I convert it into shares. He doesn't lose out on the money. He's a clever financial guy. He just converts it into equity and all the rest of it. But maybe this year he's decided, do you know what? I'm not going to do it this year. I think we need to be a little bit instead. That's fine. That's his
trainer, his choice. That's his money.
His choice on whether he's going to do it. But at least be communicate that. At least somebody come out and actually say, this is the way we are going this year. It's been left to Nigel to field these questions about what's changed, Nigel. Well, I'm the wrong person to ask. Yeah. Why can't you do this?
Neil's right, Ian, isn't he? Because, you know, we've got, there's a Bristol Sport communications person, Lisa Knight, and then who is it? Roger? Is it Roger Barton, the club? Yeah.
Dave Barton works for Lisa.
Right, but there's nothing coming out of the club that the fans want, yeah? Do we have a right to expect anything?
Well, yeah, we do, because we still fund the club to a great degree. The season ticket holders, the people who buy, pay on the day, and the, as we spoke about last week, the gates have held up and the away following's held up brilliantly. For a club that's doing okay. Okay, I know we're eighth in the table. Just to address a couple of things that have come in is from people who are listening, and thanks very much for doing that. Maybe the fans putting pictures of him as Hitler on the forum doesn't help. Yeah, that doesn't. That's very unhelpful. I'm taking you mean they're putting pictures of Pearson as Hitler. I don't know. I don't read that forum. And Tim Monahan has also said, who would want a managerial role with no money to spend and an owner who is clearly trying to affect team selection? Insanity. I don't think you can throw that at Lansdowne. I don't think he's trying to affect team selection. I think Neil made a very good point. Steve's been pumping in 16, 17 million a year for the last 2 or 3 years. He's put in all together, including what he spent on the stadium. I'll call it 300 million. And I think he just got to a point and said, well, we should be doing better. And this is the point in the interview he made when he started talking about Coventry and Luton and Robbins. He was making the point, look, I put all this money in. These clubs haven't got all that money going in. These clubs haven't signed 21 players. Certainly, and they're not paying the wages that we are. How come they're where they are? And Millwall's another one. And we're not doing it. Now, that has got to be directed at the first team coach, manager. Doesn't matter what you call them. And what's there? 3 or 4 lost their jobs so far this year? Rowett went last week?
Yeah.
So Lansdowne's now saying, right, I think Neil's spot on. Right, I've had a guts full of this. I've put a load of money into this club. You've got training facilities that are out of this world. And we don't seem to be making progress. Now, you're signing players, and to go to my point about signing players better than the ones we've got, we're not. All right, we haven't seen some of them yet, but, you know, the ones I mentioned aren't better than what we're already here. Now, we don't want to be signing squad players or backup. We want to be signing players that are going to take us to the next level. Now, if we can't afford that, the club should come out and say, well, we've got a wage bill, so we're playing kids. So yesterday, instead of mucking about with the defence like we did, we should have said, right, you know, we need a centre-back to come in. We want Cam to stay where he's best. Bingo, come on in, Duncan Aydin, and give the kid a game. Or a Roy. But, you know, the fact Nigel's the second longest serving manager in the Championship behind Mark Robbins tells you everything you want to know about the pressure that they're under. But they are very well paid, and they have got legally binding contracts that a lot of people in business don't have. So, you know, so if you a manager's got a 3-year contract and you were sick to death and fed up of him after about 6 months, then you've got to pay him for the next 2.5 years or until such time.
This rolling 12-month, or they could give him an 18-month contract on the 1st of Jan, which is like giving him a year's, it's giving him next season again. I think Pearson's results, as you've said, Ian, on numerous occasions, 15 wins a season. We've had a role without historical Bristol City going down a division and starting again. So I personally think he's worth an 18-month contract effective from the 1st of January, if we are where we are now. And then I would like to see the Lansdownes back him a little bit in the transfer market, right? With, and we're going to have players coming back. You know, I mean, we could, you know, we could mount a playoff challenge. But again, I tweeted this yesterday. There's about 15 clubs this stage into the season that would all say they can mount a playoff challenge. And that's how close this division is. Mark, let me
you've got to come back to this thing about, you know, you're saying we're going to get players back.
Yeah.
My question to you would then be when.
Well, I'm
and
saying,
your question would be, saying, yeah. And then you'd say, well, I don't know.
Don't give Pearson a contract extension now. Let's see where we are on the 1st of Jan. But before we know where we are, you know, it's only bloody 8 weeks until Christmas. Mark,
just to make the point, Dave, what you're all right saying, well, if you don't give him a contract now, you know, but we could get to Christmas and be 16th, 17th and in danger of getting sucked down.
And I said, give him a contract. Look where we are on the 1st of Jan. Because if you back him, if we are where we are on the 1st of Jan, you can't, yeah. I think they're not mutually exclusive. I think you've got to give him a contract and you've got to give him some money to push on in the second half of the season. Mark, your take
if
on
we,
that.
Yeah.
Here, just, if, itch, Mark.
If we are, yes.
Mark, what do you say?
I'd say just let him know now that if we're in a certain position in the table come January, then they would consider giving him a rolling contract. I wouldn't give him an 18-month contract. I think a rolling 12-month contract.
You could give him a contract. You'd word it in such a way that your contract, your notice period, you know, you've got a contract that goes to the end of June 2025, yeah, and then it's a rolling 12-month cancelable by either side giving the other one appropriate notice. So it's a 12-month rolling contract.
It needs some clarification. It's not going to get clarification in public.
It's not going to happen.
Let's get some simplistic. Something simplistic. Let Nigel know where you are. Just talk to him about, you know, what may happen if you are going to give him a contract, what form that contract might be, right? If the club's in a certain position by January, when the transfer window, and that you may, depending on that position, give him some funds in the transfer window to bring players in. I'd say it might be the shore up, because I see at the moment as a mid-table side. I think the division is poor up to 12 games. We're punching above our weight in eighth place. We've won two games in six home games. We haven't, you know, it's our away form that's keeping us there, and I think it's a bit of an anomaly. But if he wants to force the issue, sort it out now, and that is simple as that. And I think he's obviously feeling the pressure, influenced by his ill health. He may have some chronic condition. It might be best for all parties if he moves on, if that's what he wants. It's not going to get clarified now. The club aren't going to go out and award him a contract. He doesn't deserve it based on results. If he wants something sorted now, if he wants to sort the issue, then get it done. You can walk away and think about your health, because at the end of the day, it's this health that we've got, you know, that he should be concerned with.
He started off what I will call a big week in a positive way, being there. Neil, your shout on this. I mean, what do you think between now and the next international break, which is now only four games away, do you think there will be anything for the club, or are they just going to keep their heads down until Christmas? And
they'll keep their heads down. There won't be any.
There'll be nothing. They're not going to break cover, are they?
No, they're not.
Because they couldn't give a shit about what we think.
they're not going to break up. But I think for me, when Nigel came in, now Nigel, you know, he's not a Neil Warnock, and I'm right in hearing that Neil Warnock might be going to Millwall.
I said that to you. It's too early in the season for him to do a turnaround.
But you know, he's not a firefighter after the Watford, and going into Watford, he always sort of knew it. What he wants now, he wants a project. And he sees Bristol City as a project. And yeah. when he came in, he got given a three-year deal. And he said, right, okay, it's going to take X amount of time to get rid of all of, you know, these players, to turn it around, to be the team that I want it to be and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I think what he's looking for at the moment, by way of communication, reading between the lines, taking on board everything that we've spoken about already, is... what is the plan? What is the three-year plan now? Right, we've done this three-year plan. What is the three-year plan?
Good point.
If you turn around to him and you give him a one-year rolling contract, he's like, well, okay, but what is the plan? What is the three-year plan? What is the strategic plan of it? Are we turning around as a club and saying we are now going to be operating on a new financial model compared to where we were in the past, i.e. Lansdowne's going to say, I'm going to only put in a maximum of 10 million per season, not 20 million. And then we're operating on a much lower cost base.
Mm.
If that's the plan, then okay, that's
the plan. Be open with him and tell him. And I think at 60, he just turned 60. I think at 60, if Nigel has said, look, we're not going, we're happy where we are in a, you know, we're not going to go down, but we want to, we're happy with this mid-table championship status, then the fans need to know that. But if that's the case, then I think Nigel might say, I don't want to be, I don't need the hassle of being a championship manager if you're not going to back me to take this to the next stage. And as Tomo said on here, I think I find you, Nigel does want to stay at Bristol City, full stop, is what Tomo says.
And Nigel wants to stay.
Nigel wants to stay.
But I think with it, it's just, you know, what are our hopes and aspirations as a club?
Mm.
I really, you know, the interviews that Lansdowne's done in the last year or so have been like pointing out how other teams are sort of doing it. But what about you? What do we want? What do you, as the owner, what do the senior leadership team, what are the hopes, aspirations? Because if it's to be competitive in the division, that's one thing. And you've got to be careful, because look at Ipswich. Mick McCarthy, for years and years and years, you know, solidified. They got rid of him, they bought in Paul Hurst, they dropped down.
And then it took him six years.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the League clubs that have gone down into League One and are having to do that reset and then come back. Some of them dropped the Coventry's.
Well, Portsmouth been down for years, haven't they?
Portsmouth, Coventry went all the way down to League Two before the reset. So what are your hopes, aspirations? If it's may remain competitive in this division, then, okay, you go out and you say, this is where our cost base is now. We've had to look at it and this is what we're doing. But there's nothing. There's nothing. And then it's just ambiguous amongst the supporters. Supporters are second guessing. Nigel's had enough on the basis of Mark eloquently put his whole sort of thing. Right, what are we doing here? What are we doing? And I don't see a year rolling contract. He's a project man. He wants to, you know, build a firm foundation and sort of.
But he is at a stage of his life. No, but he is at a stage of his life. And here's so I'll come to you in next. Yeah, he's at a stage of his life. And I'll give you an example, right? Everybody knows I do recruitment. I've recently recruited an MD for a company, but the existing MD, who's 62, same age as Nigel, he'd been with the company 6 years, and this particular business, they got new private equity backers, right, and who've got a plan to triple the size of the company in Europe over the next 3 years, right? He's 62, doesn't need the hassle, and he's turned around and said to the new owners, I want to pull out now. I don't want to give this another 3 years. So even if you gave Pearson a three-year contract, we've talked about his health in this interview here. Does he really want to be trundling along, keeping this club, bringing youngsters through that are being sold, right? If the club are saying, you know, we're happy peddling our wares as a mid-table championship side, he might not want to stick around for 3 years. He might say, well...
Yeah, but I don't think, and I'm conscious that we said we'd go to him, but I don't think you give somebody a three-year and then you get to the three-year and then he'd say, well, no, oh, we're just going to go to you. That's about...
No, but if we give him a three-year contract as of the first...
If we give him a three-year contract... And then a one-year rolling.
Well, if he gives him a three-year, well, it's like I signed a three-year lease for my office building, right? And then I review it, and it's a rolling 3 months notice period now. Right, Ian, go on, have your bit in there now. Go on, fire away.
We're talking about, does he want this, does he want that? I mean, there's two ways negotiation works. You sit down with somebody. Firstly, cut to Neil's point, you have to clarify what the strategy is. Now, I'm sure if you spoke to Steve Lansdowne and you said, where do you want to be? He'd say, in the Premier League, right? What people don't seem to ever ask him is, well, how are you going to do it? But I'll tell you what his answer would be, I think. Come back all I said, Steve, if it's all wrong. Is he'd say, well, we want to develop our own players.
Yeah.
In an ideal world, I'd like a team of 11 homegrown players. That team would take us to the top of the league. Now, I've just briefly looked at Ipswich, where our friend Mr. Ashton is. Their away forms, played 5, won 4, drew 1, lost none. They've only scored 6, but they've only conceded 2. Then I had a look at their team, and it's got a real third division feel to it. Looked at their team in their last home game. It's got a real third division feel to it with Wes Burns on it. So
he's got shoulder injury. He's out for a period.
But yeah. They haven't gone out and signed a team of superstars and spent 50 million or anything like that. I think they spent about 3 million in the transfer market. And they seem to have hit the ground running in a way that we didn't when we came up. So if you want to get to the Premier League, I think Steve would probably say, yeah, I've done the spend big and you'll get there. And we didn't. You know, we went out and I know it's about timing and pre-pandemic and all that kind of stuff. We went out, we got Callas, we got De Silva, we got Casey Palmer. We spent all this money, which Mark Ashton hasn't been allowed to do at Ipswich. The owners of the club have said, no, that's the amount of money you're getting, pal, and you've got to get by with that. And he has, and he's gone out, in fairness to him, and recruited a very good young coach by the look of it. So I think...
Nice human being.
But if you said to Steve Lansdowne, what do you want? The answer is always, we want to get to the Premier League. I don't see, and Nigel Pearson is the type of bloke that will tell him, I don't see a clear path to doing that with the budget that we've got and the players that we've got at the moment. And I'm allowing for the fact that we will get one or two more gems through from the academy. Perhaps not Alex Scott level, but probably Semenyo level.
Yeah, well, I think Tommy Conway's,
you know,
Tommy Conway's heading down that path.
Well, if he gets a Scotland cap and he does well in the World Cup, the full cap, and he does well in the World Cup, then he'd be gone straight away. But I think we have to – the contract situation with Nigel Pearson, the thing that worried me was when he said, well, you know, you go and see if you can find anybody to give you an answer, because that more or less says, well, I've tried, and who'd you speak to?
Yeah.
And – so I think we're due one of Steve Lansdowne's. It'll probably be an interview either with Radio Bristol or the club. Which, I mean, the club one, he's not going to get asked difficult questions, is he? By Dave Barton.
No.
So no. I think it's about time he did a Radio Bristol one and said, right, Steve, the CEO went. Now, if that job is so important that you have to have one and pay them a lot of money, you shouldn't be able to just get rid of the position, which we haven't got a CEO now.
No.
We've got a new structure. So how's this new structure work, Steve?
Yeah, well, he needs, look, the Lansdowne.
Or it needs to be the lad that is the chief financial officer. If he's at the head of things, if you will, because the guy that is a football operations officer was reporting into him, and I think Gavin Marshall, the top man, isn't it? If it's the right... Gavin, can you come on Radio Bristol and explain how the new structure works, who everybody reports to, and how would Nigel Pearson go about getting a new contract, and when will it? Because Alexander was very cagey, I would say, when he was asked, well, Nigel's been round the track and he knows what's going on and all that. Next minute, he's gone. So you're bound to get, when you get an absence of communication like this, The rumour mills are ticking over at a million miles an hour, and it doesn't work. And no, as fans, let's call ourselves stakeholders in the club, you know, we've got a right to know. So just, I mean, open invitation, Steve Lansdowne, Gavin Marshall, if you happen to be listening, or anybody that works who's listening, come on the podcast. The floor is yours. We're not going to ask you tricky questions.
They won't come on here in a million years. They might get on the official, I mean, the unofficial Bristol City podcast.
No, I don't know. I mean, there's an open invite to come on here and explain what the situation is. Because at the moment, we don't know.
Well, you can ask. You can, David, and this is what they do on the channels. Forever Bristol City approached the club to comment, and so far they declined to provide an answer.
Tim Onan's made a good point. You end up losing the fans if we haven't got a project to buy into. And he said, I'd like, Todger came in there somewhere, holiday to the Maldives and some hair, but I ain't going to get it. Careful what you wish for.
The biggest thing for me, I'm conscious of the time, the biggest thing for me is the chairman situation. I mean, if you're going to be an owner and you're not going to be, you know, you're going to be overseas and all the rest of it, then the chairman needs to come forward, doesn't it? But it's not going to happen because
the chairman's the boy. Well, it's the boy, John.
Well, this is it. The nepotism. The nepotism that's shown.
All right. Hey.
With regards to it, if you're going to have a company structure that's going to be actually, you know, effective, don't put your son, your absent son, as the chairman of the football club. I'm sorry, but
you could have an executive chairman, right? Look, they could do no worse than the drag Richard Scudamore out of retirement and say, Richard.
But Dave, you're always assuming that Richard wants to come and do it, and he clearly doesn't.
I mean, he was courted to get who should you recommend as chief exec, and he recommended Phil Alexander. Right, look,
we're going to be doing this.
We're going to be doing this to death until something drops. We've got Ipswich coming up on Wednesday. We'll be doing our match review of Ipswich on Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. I know Dave Fevs, I've got Dave lined up for that one. Look, yesterday was, it was a sad day yesterday for anybody connected with football, because it was the passing of Sir Bobby Charlton at the age of 86. I was old enough to remember him in that 1968 European Champions final. He scored, I think, the first and the fourth goals in that particular game. I did see him play once, and that was for Manchester United, not against Bristol City. This was October 1972, 51 years ago. It was a League Cup tie at the Gas. I was over there, Stepney, Best. Bobby Charlton was in there. If you look on YouTube, there's a little snippet of that particular thing, because the buggers, they went up to Old Trafford. In 1973, this was, they went up there and beat them 2-1 in the replay, 51 years ago. But Bobby Charlton, you know, he's of his era, like Stanley Matthews was in the era prior to that. So I saw him once. Mark, Bobby Charlton, your tribute, and did you ever see him play in the flesh?
No. I'm 55 years old, but I wasn't fortunate enough to watch Bobby Charlton play. I'll just say a couple of things. One of the best footballers this country has ever produced. And then following that, one of the best football ambassadors for this country ever. The man was dignified, respected, completely respected. To think that when he came through Man United in 1955 and lost close friends in that Munich air disaster, what he went through, and then you know, him and Matt Busby, you know, half a team lost, what that would have done to players mentally today, when, you know, you'd be probably suffering from PTSD for a long time and wouldn't have had the people in place to be able to deal with it. He came through that, won the World Cup with England, won the European Cup against Benfica in 68. Didn't succeed in football management. I think he tried it at Preston. Mm. But what a wonderful ambassador for English football. He'll be sadly missed, because he was a giant. We don't make people like that anymore. He was brilliant. So very sorry to see him pass.
Neil, you're another young man, relative. Well, I'm the oldest one here. I mean, when he dies at 86 and you're age 67, you're thinking 19 more seasons of watching Bristol City, if you're lucky or not. But Neil, not old enough to have seen him play, but his reputation, the two goals in the World Cup semi-final that beat Portugal in 1966. But
Last of the Busby Babes, he is, and it's one of those deaths that makes you think about your own
mortality
to a certain degree. Mm. Right, okay, that these icons of the game are dying. Obviously, 86 is a good age. Do you know what I mean? We're not talking about. But did he have dementia?
He did.
Is he another one that probably headed those very heavy balls?
I wouldn't have seen it as a header of the ball, but was that wispy,
the comb over. Yeah.
I think it leaves, didn't they say on the news last night that Hurst is the only surviving member of the...
I didn't realise Roger Hunt had gone.
No, I didn't.
Sorry, Neil, carry on.
Yeah.
Sorry, Neil. Yeah, is it just...
He's the last one, Jeff Hurst. Hurst is the last one. Very good nick, actually.
There we go. But, it's more a question of English football then, really, isn't it? The last time we won the World Cup, there's only one person still alive from the team when we last won the World Cup. There we go. Wonderful, man. You go up to Old Trafford, you go across to the Bobby Charlton stand there, and they have all the seats, and they're all named, and like the Busby family have six seats there permanently for them. Bobby Charlton similarly has four seats, and in that stand at Old Trafford, these are just icons of the game that beyond their death, the family is still gifted six or four seats and all the rest of it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's respect. Mm. Obviously, it's Manchester United. It's different, but it just shows respect that it runs through the generations and it never changed at that club.
Ian, you're
that's a wonderful testament, isn't it?
Ian, you're not as old as me, but older than Neil and Mark. Did you ever see him in the flesh? And what would your recollections or tribute be to Sir Bobby Charlton?
Well, there are very, very few Englishmen who can say I'm the World Cup winner. He was one of them. Never saw a guy, apart from, I think, possibly Johnny Giles, the old Leeds player, but that was passing, not shooting, who could hit a ball equally well with either foot. Right foot, left foot, 25 yards, top corner, and not smell it. He was so ahead of his time because he played with a number nine on his back for England, but he wasn't a centre forward. He played in that role in behind, as they call it now. So because people forget, when we this 4-3-3 and all this brilliant, this new stuff, we played 4-3-3 when we won the World Cup. And the front three were Alan Ball, Jeff Hurst and Roger Hunt. And you had Charlton coming up behind him. You had Nobby Stiles in there as your what would now be called a holding midfield player.
Nobby used to win your creative one.
Yeah, and he'd win the ball and kick people. And obviously you had that Rolls Royce, best defender, one of the best footballers I've ever seen, Bobby Moore, at centre back. And if you ever want to know who were the best two central defenders in the history of the game, it would be Bobby Moore and anyone else because he was that good. Mm. Very, very sad. And I suppose a lot of people would look at that age and say, well, in fairness, he's had a good innings. But I remember that World Cup, watching that in the council flat down St Jude's where I grew up. And also the 1968 European Cup at Wembley, where he got a header. And he didn't get many, but he got that header. I think it's important to remember that it's just not heading a football that gets you dementia. It's the biggest killer in the country. And lots of people get it who've never been near a football field. But very, very sad. And but I think he had the life that he wanted to have. He wasn't a guy that wanted to be on all the talk shows and telling you how great he was and all the rest of it. But seemed that, and it's what I find with really good footballers. And I have to say, it's what I find with a lot of the older City players, particularly the ones that Neil looks after at the former Players Association, is that they're very humble people.
Yeah.
There's no edge on them. They're not big time Charlies, and they'll talk to you the same as I'm talking to you. And they're always very polite. They'll always listen. And I think of just while I think about that, I think we should mention the murals that the former Players Association are putting up. This is nothing to do, I would add it, nothing to do with Bristol City Football Club. This is something the former Players Association are doing off their own bat, where they've got these various sites. There's one on the side of the Coopers. There's a mural of Chris Garland that was opened last week. And they've got three other sites that they'll be putting murals up as things develop. So, well done to Neil for that and all the work that he does at the former Players Association. And it's great to see the club doing something like that around Bedminster too, because that does give you that additional community involvement.
Definitely.
Which is something that I think, or this isn't actually to do with the club, but something that the club do, like, you know, with the food on the away trips and things like that. I think that those are good things about the club.
Yeah. No, there is lots of good things about the club. It's a club that, you know, we're here. We all love the club. We want to see the club do well. People say we're critical, we're anti-fit and everything like that. We want to, you know, we when we're criticising, sometimes it's to provoke debate, but most of the time is how we feel. And anybody who's supported Bristol City for as long as we have, it's the hope that kills sometimes. But thanks to everybody who's listened and watched us live on the YouTube this morning. We're looking forward to the Ipswich game. Big game for Nigel. I got a feeling we might turn the Tractor Boys over. They haven't played for 18 days, so they'll either be fresh as daisies or a bit rusty. It'd be good, interesting to see what sort of reaction Mark Ashton gets, whether he'll be greeted with open arms in the director's box, whether the fans will have something to say. And then obviously hot on the heels of the Ipswich game, seven-side derby against Cardiff at the weekend. So, you know, if Nigel could emerge from the next 7 days without defeat, then we've got Sheffield Wednesday at home, QPR away before the next international break. If Nigel carries on in this sequence of games before international break with the way he started against Coventry, right, it's going to make the pressure is going to be building on the Lansdownes to say something, yeah? To actually say something, yeah? Let's have some communication from the club. I mean, you know, it's not good. It needs to change. We're in a good position. We're eighth in the league with just around approaching a third of the season gone. Yeah, you know, we're not punching above our weight, I don't think. We're living up to an expectation that we hope can just go that little bit extra further. Neil, Mark and Ian, thanks for your contribution. Thanks for everybody who's listening. Looking forward to next time. All the best, everybody. Goodbye. I'm
feeling happy. God bless everyone. Bye-bye.
Yeah, take care. Thank you, everybody. Bye. Load them all away. What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy. As happy as a king when the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he stops throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bobbing along. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just...
the kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.